Today's first reading from Exodus is full of complaining. Complaining born of forgetfulness and fear. We find the Israelites wandering in the wilderness, perhaps 6 months out of Egypt. Their food supply is run out, and they take out their fear and frustration on their bold but unseasoned leaders. It wasn't long before today's events that they were being led out of Egypt, walking with dry feet through the Red Sea, leaving behind years of slavery and Pharaoh's army. Just a chapter before in Exodus, the Israelites were singing and dancing and praising God for their miraculous deliverance. But in today's text, just a little while after Deliverance Day, we find not a word about their rescue or about the God who made it happen and who pledged to go with them all the way to freedom and a new life and a new land. The Israelites, like so many of us, had a very short memory. Hunger and panic made them fear they were headed for the worst possible scenario. They forgot God's promises. So they didn't even bother to complain about God. Instead, they picked on Moses and Aaron. Overnight, they rewrote the story of their oppression into a story of not such a bad life in Egypt, and wondered aloud why they let anybody talk them into leaving. Now, before you and I start pointing fingers and start talking trash about those Israelites, let's be clear. It's a tribute to the Jewish people and to the rabbis who selected one. It went into the Hebrew Bible, the one that Jesus used, that they kept this story in and didn't try to pretty it up. It was an act of honesty and faith to tell it like it was, and so help generations of God's people see themselves, ourselves too, in the story. Including that story makes it clear that spiritual amnesia affects us all. It also provides even more evidence that God is a God of grace and compassion, a God who keeps promises even when we don't, and who rains down manna instead of fire from heaven in the face of our faithless complaining. And then there's this story that John tells in the gospel. The crowd that came looking for Jesus in that story were not complaining, but they were confused, maybe even a little thick-headed. And which of us has not been there? They were all caught up in loaves and manna, the miracle for their ancestors in the desert, and the miracle of feeding thousands that Jesus had recently performed. So much so that they were in danger of missing the true manna standing before them. Jesus, the bread of life, the food that satisfies every need and every hunger, and that has no expiration date, not even death. Last week, we began a series of gospel readings that focus on the bread of life. And now here we are in the second week of that series. In working through this bread chapter, we're doing what is helpful for faith and understanding. Not so much working out in our heads the concept of Jesus as the bread of life, but rather spending time with Jesus, our bread, experiencing and encountering the Word made flesh, which will help us embrace Him and all that He comes to give us. It takes time for our relationship with Jesus to develop and grow. Indeed, it takes a lifetime. But when we come with a spirit of humility and modesty about what we know and what we don't know, about how and why God chooses to feed us, when we sit down at Jesus' feet patiently, not in a rush, saying, we're willing to be taught about who you are and what sort of life you bring, we'll find ourselves more than satisfied. We'll discover that we have all that we need to sustain this body and life, now and forever, as Luther's catechism put it. And so it is today. Jesus is here, truly present, ready to feed us anew with the manna of mercy and the bread of life. Whenever these readings come round again, as they do every 3 years, I remember a Sunday nearly 10 years ago when I baptized a little boy named Nico in Oakland and preached on these same texts. Nico was then 2 years old, so just beginning a lifetime of relationship with Jesus. But already he'd shown signs of wanting that relationship and discovering what it can offer. Dancing down the aisle to and from communion, reaching out for the bread at the communion table, drawn like a magnet to the stack of individual communion glasses. These were all signs of God drawing Nico to God's self, and of Nico being drawn to follow, being called to follow. In today's second reading from Ephesians, we find powerful, beautiful words about growing up in faith, about growing up to lead a life worthy of our calling. All of us have the same calling, whether we're children or adults. We're all called to a life of love. Love for God and love for our neighbors. And through baptism or any other way God chooses, we are given what we need to live this way. The writer of Ephesians talks about this in terms of us being equipped for the work of ministry, which is the work that each and all of us do, not just pastors or seminary professors or the big names in the Bible. In this text, being equipped isn't about accumulating skills or knowledge. Here, the word we translate as equip comes from a Greek word that means the setting of a bone. That suggests that sin is the condition of being out of alignment with Christ. And that baptism is God's act of realigning us with Christ, with his death and resurrection. In baptism, for anyone, a child or an adult, God resets the bones of our lives so that going forward, our life will look more and more like Christ's life, a life of love, a life lived for others. A life that is free and forever. On that day 9 years ago when I baptized little Nico, I was struck by the meaning of the name he bore. Nico Shubi Francesco. You can see his East African and Italian roots. That means, I'm here for the victory of the people. I'm hopeful and I'm free. From that day, Nico has borne on his forehead and chest the symbol of victory, hope, and freedom. The cross of Christ, the sign under which he grows daily into Nico, man of God, a man for the people, and a man rejoicing in the hope and freedom that are his true inheritance. Nico doesn't know you. He may never meet you. But I believe he'd be very happy to share with you his name so that you might remember daily the inheritance you share with him and all God's people, the victory of love and hope and freedom, and the bread that will continue to fill you and fit you for life as God's beloved people, sharing the bread of life with the world, and dedicated to join Jesus in making the world near and far a place where no one need go hungry for love or hope or peace. Soon we'll gather around the table to receive holy manna, the bread Jesus promised, the bread Jesus is, the true bread come down from heaven to strengthen our faith, to nourish us into life, to draw us ever closer to Him, to increase our love for all people, yes, even our enemies, to make us one, and to confirm in us the hope of life forever with God, a life we've already begun. So thanks be to God for giving us the true bread from heaven. Thanks be to God for the gifts of baptism and communion that enable Christ to live in our hearts by faith. And thanks be to God for drawing us together and sending us out to share this bread with the world. Amen. I invite you now to stand as you're able for our hymn of the day, number 461.